Good morning and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the FBN Holdings 9-month 2019 results conference call. Following an overview by the Group Managing Director of FBN Holdings, an interactive Q&A session will be available. Today's call is being recorded. I would now like to hand the call over to Mr. Uke Eke, Group Managing Director of FBN Holdings. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon and good morning. Welcome to the FBN Holdings investor and analyst presentation for the 9 months ended September 30, 2019. My name is Uke Eke, the Group Managing Director, FBN Holdings PLC. Let me quickly introduce my colleagues on this call. You know them already. Shola Adedito, the CEO of FBN Limited. I have Kayode Akinkugbe, the CEO of FBN Quest Merchant Bank. Ini Ebong is the Group Treasurer and Head International Banking. Wale Aluyebi, CFO at the holding company. Segun Alebioshun, the CRO of First Bank. Patrick Iyamobo, the CFO of First Bank. I also have Val Ojuma, the CEO of the life insurance business. He'll be speaking for the group, insurance group. We had earlier posted the results pretty much early, and I hope you've had time to look through. So I'm going to run through the presentation. The intention is to do a very short presentation for the 9 months, and then we'll have enough time for Q&A. I think the key message we want to pass to the investing public is that we are on course, very much so, to deliver sustainable long-term performance. For the 9 months to September 30, 2019, we are happy to report significant improvements across most metrics that we all track, largely around asset quality, diversified revenue, and of course profitability. And then specifically on slide 5, you will see a clear statement of how we have fared on the journey. We have been able to bring down the non-performing loans down to 12.6%. Recall that by June, we are at 25.9. We therefore affirm that we will be below 10% by year end. Let me repeat, please. By December of 2018, we are 25.9. By June, we are 14.5. And now, September, 12.6. So we reaffirm our commitment to delivering the single digit NPL ratio by year end. And building on that, the credit impairment charge improved by 62.6%, and cost of risk is down from 4.5% 9 months of 2018 to the current level of just below 2%, precisely 1.9. We have also seen 17% growth in profit before tax, and the build-up of that is the non-interest revenue up 6% year-on-year. Again, we are fast-tracking our transaction-led model, which we reported was key to us. And we also have strengthened our electronic banking activities. And you'll see that year on year, there's an improvement of 45.9%. Now, the increase in electronic banking income relative to the total non-interest income continues to soar. September 2018, it was 25.3% electronic banking contribution to total non-interest income. This time around, we have inched up to 34.8%. Let me then turn to the efficiency ratios, which you have on slide 6. You are aware of the declining rate environment. And so we are reporting margin compression, with earnings yields down 11.2% from 11.7%. And then the net interest margin is also down 7.3% from 7.7%. However, as you can see in the presentation, the post-tax ROE has inched up to 12.2% for 9 months 2019 from 8.7% corresponding period of 2018. And the post-tax return on average assets also improved to 1.2% relative to what it was last year, 1.1%. Now, I will also call out the cost-to-income ratio. Recall that during the first half 2019 call, we did say that cost-to-income ratio will remain elevated for the 2019 financial year. And so we are reporting also increase in cost, but if you look at the operating expenses, we're going to give you the breakdown when we get into the question and answers, but clearly they are related to ongoing strategic projects which have continued to improve our non-interest income. So we do believe that we are doing the right things when it comes to investment for future growth. Notwithstanding, we do believe that we're going to close 2019 in a very comfortable position. Now, we like to say that if you go to slide 23, there's a bit of revision which we are making to the guidance numbers. And that is because based on what we see, we think that four ratios will be impacted by this revision. One is the cost-to-income ratio. We had guided the market to 58% to 62% cost-to-income ratio, but from what we see, we are revising that ratio to about 71% cost-to-income ratio. Cost of risk, we had guided to 3.5% to 4%. This is a positive adjustment where we are guiding to 2% to 3%. Because we have done quite a lot of heavy lifting in the first 9 months. Deposit growth, we had also guided the market to about 10%. From what we now see, we are revising the growth rate to about 5%. And finally, on loan growth, we had suggested 5% at the beginning of the year. 9 months, we have done 8.1%, which is above what we had guided. So we are revising that target to below 10%. All other guidance numbers remain unchanged. So this basically will be the highlights of the slides that we have showed or presented to you. And we do hope that you like the progress we have made. But we are certainly ready to take your questions. We then open it up for questions, please. Thank you.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, you may signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that's star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. And we will now take our first question. It comes from Tayosi Oni of Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon, and thank you very much for taking my questions. So my first question is just an update on asset quality trends at the bank. So we know that you've drove NPLs down. I just wanted to catch up on how much of this came from recoveries, restructuring, and write-offs. And also just to ask if you foresee any further pressure on asset quality going into the end of the year. My second question is on efficiency and your operational losses. Please, could you shed more light on this, as it's a bit It seems a bit clouded right now. We just want to better understand what is going into this operational and other losses line. My third question is on your loan growth. So the macro is still fragile, and there was significant loan growth this quarter in light of the LDR requirements. So I just wanted to ask, what's driving this? What sectors are driving this? And what's your outlook on that too, especially for the new minimum in December, which will be 65%? My last question is on the macro, the general macro, and the CBN. So we've seen a number of circulars come in the last couple of days, and I just wanted to pick your brain and hear your thoughts on this, especially in light of the excess liquidity that could be going into the system. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Segun Alebioju, Chief Risk Officer. We don't foresee pressure on our NPL. So as guided, we are moving towards single-digit NPL, and we don't expect this to change. On what we achieved in Q3, the gains are distributed across the four variables. Loan growth, we saw improved loan growth, so it has implications for NPL ratio. Recovery was about 30% of that. Restructuring was about 28%, and write-off was about 22%. So it cut across. So in realizing asset, you have air cut, so we did that. And then we restructured, so some fell off, and then loan growth contributed order. On LDR and loan growth, as you must have observed in our financials, we grew loans in Q3. We grew loans, but within our risk appetite. We will, as a bank, prioritize the fact that we must remain disciplined risk takers. So we don't foresee loan growth to contribute to further NPL down the line. Marco?
Okay. This is Patrick. So the question around the OPEX trend year on year, there are two bits to that. You have the non-reoccurring costs, and then you have the BAU costs. But I'd like to start out by saying that when you adjust for the non-recurring costs, you're actually looking at OPEX trend 2015 to date at less than 5% CAGR. Now, to the non-recurring costs, they fall into largely four or five buckets. The first is the what we've described as exceptional losses. And these relate to charges that we've had to recognize in terms of disputes with government agencies. I think we mentioned one or two names on the previous call. We believe we have a good position with these on these transactions, but as we clean up our books and reposition for next year, and we don't want to be distracted, we've taken in some of these charges. The second bucket has to do with our efforts to reposition the workforce to continue to drive the business going forward. And in this instance, we're talking about the productivity uplift from the workforce. We're a unionized entity. Again, we've proceeded to deal with this issue in a manner that presents minimal distraction to business and management. We've had to take charges, again, non-reoccurring charges, to address this workforce optimization efforts. The third cost bucket has to do with our franchise. Again, this is about doing two things: celebrating who we are and how long we've been around, about 125 years, and then pivoting that to drive our franchise across our presence countries, and that's in Africa and in Europe. We've had to incur costs, again, non-reoccurring, and in terms of what we've done across our other present countries to jumpstart the brand awareness we want to push in those markets. We're already seeing the benefits from those in terms of the revenue pickup we've seen in some of those markets. The last two I'd like to touch on are regulatory and investment in technology solutions. Regulatory is not a non-recurring cost, but you know most of the details. Between AMCON and NDIC, and as you think about the growth in our balance sheet, as well as the growth in our deposits, and you layer on top of that the change in the AMCON rules, you can see where the growth in our regulatory costs is coming from. That alone has driven up our OPEX bucket by at least $3 billion. We've been talking on the call about our investments in IT to drive the business, to drive productivity, and that is showing up in terms of our maintenance costs as well as our depreciation. So these are really the things. If we back out, if we think about this cost profile, the non-reoccurring elements account for more than 90%. So we are confident that the balance, which is really meant to drive productivity and efficiency, is money well spent.
Okay, this is Ine. Just to answer your question around the macro and the recent release of various central bank circulars, I think the more important circular was around the elimination of leveraged T-bill purchases. And if you step back and listen to the central bank's comments, I think their concerns were around people using or banks using leveraged loans to boost their LDRs. And I think in clarifying that they are barring such T-bill purchases, that effectively dealt with that. So you get real credit growth to the real sector. And I guess we'll see that pan out in the numbers that will be reported as we get into Q4. With respect to the additional ones which relate to participation at OMO and all of that, I think the net summary, you alluded to it in asking the question. By excluding MBFIs largely from that segment, it forces them to look at primary market issue T-bills and bank deposits. So naturally, we'd expect in that segment of the market rates to decline. So when you look at it from, if I look at it from the bank's perspective, it's probably probably more NIM accretive to the extent that we would expect deposit liability rates to probably trend down in a lower rate environment, whilst the OMO segment remains open for banks and portfolio investors to play. I think it's still early days. We need to see how the dynamic will play out. These circulars were released just last night, and it then suggests we may see some rate volatility or indeed maybe even FX volatility in the markets as we go forward.
Okay. Next question, please.
All right. Excuse me. I'd like to follow up on some of the answers I got, if that's okay.
Okay.
All right. So the first one is on the credit growth. So what sectors are you lending in, and what are the catalysts that you're seeing in these sectors that make them attractive? And then also, with the explanation on the cost, I suppose the next question is, for next year, where do you see the cost trending towards? Are we expecting a significant fall in OPEX next year? Thank you.
Our credit growth have been to telecoms, manufacturing, retail, through consumer, and trade. And for us, telecoms, if you observe, in 2019, we've seen the top two telecom companies coming to the market to raise funds, to spend on capex, and to expand. And that is a lot about their business plan, their growth, and their future, and we try to invest in that future. Manufacturing, we've seen expansion and government interest in lending to the real sector, which we have seen. And we have decided to participate in that because we believe that the future of the country is manufacturing and that the economy will expand along that. Then retail and consumer, of course, everything being manufactured has to be consumed. And then we're looking at the market and the population, the retail and consumer represent significant proportion. And of course, as is part of our plans, and trade is not for everything because you need to import raw materials to manufacture, you need to do all things. And Nigeria, with population, we also need to consume. And so these four sectors fit into our plan and the risk assessment criteria that we have set.
This is Patrick. So in terms of the OPEX trend, like we pointed out a short while ago, we have a very good handle of our costs. We have a clear distinction between the non-reoccurring and the occurring costs, which are frankly investments for business growth. If you adjust for the non-reoccurring costs, we are confident that we can maintain our historical OPEX growth rate into next year. As pointed out earlier, 2015 to date, that has been CAGR, less than 5% CAGR.
Thank you, Patrick. Let's move on to the next question, please.
Thank you. Thank you. And again, as a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, it's star one. We'll now take our next question. It comes from K.O. Basigi of Matsi. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the presentation, guys. I just wanted to ask, I mean, with by the 9 months, you didn't meet the new LDR's requirements by the CBN. And, I mean, looking at your capital, will you be able to meet the new target by the end of December without the need to raise fresh equity capital?
I think the straight answer to your question is that we did not meet the LDR.
Okay. Yes, I mean, that's from the numbers that I can see, that you didn't meet the 60%. I mean, from is the numbers that I see. I mean, I'm maybe I might be calculating it wrongly, but I mean, from my calculations, you are around 55% LDR. That's from my calculations. I might be calculating it wrong. But I mean, what I wanted to ask is, will you be able to meet the new requirements? Because still looking at your capital ratios by the 9 months, would you be able to meet the new requirements by the end of December without the need to raise capital?
Okay. Let me say that capital is not a barrier to us. What we need to grow to 65 is 1.5% CAGR. And the 9 months profit provides that. So for us to grow 31st December to meet 65, capital is not a constraint. But what is more important to us is that we are disciplined risk takers. And so we have to grow loan in line with our risk appetite and tolerance limit. And so if we have loans that fit into that bill, we will create. But if we don't, we will look towards pipeline and see how we make it.
And this is Patrick. Just to add to the comment made by Segun, the CRO, our estimate is to close the year at a CAR of not less than 17%.
And still meet the minimum LDR requirement.
I think the question around LDR has been answered. First of all, capital is not a concern. And we have very rich pipeline. Therefore, we are considering all of those requests on case-by-case basis. We have sufficient capital to meet if that were an issue. But the second question was, do you have enough capital to hit 65? The answer is yes, if we wanted to, and if we see very good transactions. We're not going to sacrifice the loan growth on the altar of capital, if you will, because that would obviously lead to erosion if we make the wrong calls.
Okay.
Okay, we can move to our next question. Comes from Karim Sawabini of Moon Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just a quick question just to make it more clear. When you look at the cost-to-income ratio in 2020 and you remove what you deem as being non-recurring, what is the range of the cost-to-income ratio you think we should be expecting?
So let me respond this way without giving guidance for 2020. If you look at 2019 and you adjust for the non-reoccurring, our cost-income ratio is actually about 64%, which is approximately what it was in 2018 of about 63%. So again, into 2020, our OPEX CAGR, we expect to maintain what we've done in the previous period on a BAU basis, i.e. backing out the non-reoccurring, and we're optimistic about our revs growth potential. So we do not expect that 2020 will be adverse relative to the adjusted 2019 cost-to-income ratio.
Okay, so basically what you're saying is if 64% is sort of the cleaner cost-to-income ratio of 2019, you should have obviously positive jaws in 2020, and therefore it should come below that range.
Correct.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
And we'll move to our next question. Comes from Ronak Gadia of EFG Hermes. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for the presentation. Before I ask my questions, I'd just like to say congratulations on the NPLs. It's been a long road, but glad to see that you're gradually getting there. With that being said, just two or three questions, which are more or less a follow-up of the previous callers. Firstly, on the LDR, it would just be helpful if you could just tell us what the LDR number is, because there's a bit of confusion as to what is included in the denominator in terms of various funding sources and whatnot. So on the back of that, what's the LDR and what's the amount of loan growth that you need to achieve in absolute terms to achieve that 65% minimum? The second point, again, related to what Kio was asking on your capital, could you just tell us what your capital adequacy ratio is on a full IFRS 9 basis? From what I understand, what you've reported probably includes the transition reserve. So it would be useful to know what the pre-IFRS or the full IFRS 9 number is. And the third question, again, is just to continue with the discussions on regulations. I guess Innie mentioned some of the regulations, but apart from that, there was also the introduction of the cashless policy, which seems quite punitive and could be counterproductive. There was also the introduction of the stamp duty on electronic transactions and other one or two regulations. So if you could just talk through what impact that could have on the bank and on the system in general. Thank you.
It's clear that we did not meet the LDR or LFR as of September. The more important thing is our plan towards, one, maintaining healthy loan book, two, growing loan book within our risk appetite. Three, ensuring that we have a very strong balance sheet. December is 2.5 months away. It's our plan to meet 65%, but within our risk appetite. So if our plan to meet it, yes, but it has to be within our risk appetite. And as we said earlier, it has nothing to do with capital, but capital is sufficient for us to grow that 65%. While I will not be able to give you the exact number, it's because is dependent on what the funding base looks like at any point in time. So if by December, if my funding base increases more than today, I will need to book more loans. If by December, if my funding base reduces, I will also need to book less. So I will not be able to confirm exact figure to you, Alex.
Okay, this is Patrick. To the question about capital, I'll respond to your question in two parts. In terms of our CAR at the end of Q3, I mean, as you know, it was about 15.1%. Adjusting for the transition forbearance, it comes to about 10.2%, of which T1 related is about 9.8%. However, we are comforted with the plans we have to capitalize to year end. Three key things to note. The first is if we capitalize our earnings by year end, and then we layer on top of that the T2 raise that is ongoing and will be consummated soon, we are about 17.5%. A portion of the forbearance is going to fall off, about 30 billion. But we also expect to claw back our regulatory risk reserve as our loan portfolio gets cleaned up. So net-net, the transition adjustment gets taken care of by regulatory risk reserve, and between the capitalization of our T1 earnings and the T2 support, we still expect to be about 17.5%, and we've described it as north of 17%.
Ronak, just to give you comfort. I know this question would come up again. You've been quite engaging on the issue of capital. Obviously, you desire that we have very healthy buffer. We share that sentiment. We need to have a healthy buffer. But you remember that full year 2018, we were at about 17.3% CAR. And then we guided you to 5% loan growth. Remember where we are now, we've grown about 8%. So that tells you there was a deliberate effort at increasing the loan book, particularly after we wrote off the big item, AE. So we found the opportunity to grow. That meant capital consumption, risk-weighted assets increasing. But it was deliberate, and we have seen the impact of that on the revenue flowing down to the PBT. So it was deliberate, which is why we said that we can comfortably get to 17 plus at the end of the year. So there's benefit in sweating the capital that we saw. But let's leave 2019 and make the point that 2020 will be a far better year for us because there are very few encumbrances to growing our business, the impairment charges taken care of. And so we do think that for CAR 2020, we should be looking beyond 18%, even after growth. So that should give you some comfort. We haven't leveraged our Tier 1, which is what Patrick talked about. We believe that the process we are ongoing right now should yield the Tier 2 euro bond, and that obviously would increase our capital base.
Okay, we can move to our next question. It comes from Wale Olusi of United Capital PLC. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me. I want to start by congratulating management on the result and, of course, the progress on the NPLs. Obviously, the conversation so far have built around cost and asset quality. So most of my questions have been answered, but I just want to quickly, get some more color on what the risk management framework or the strategy going forward will be like for the bank. I know someone mentioned something about risk appetite, but I'd like to know what the risk appetite looks like for the bank. And looking at efforts from the central bank lately, almost looking like to compel banks to lend. What are your views on what the NPLs in the entire industry is going to be looking like going forward? Thank you.
Our risk appetite is targeted at moderate risk and anchored on weighted average risk rating, noting the fact that NPLs are lagging indicators. So what we've done is for us to map our risk universe. And for credit risk in particular, that impacts so much on NPL, able to dimension our target market and our risk acceptance criteria. And for our target market, we prioritize and try to look at sectors that are less volatile and also reduce concentration. So what we've done was to map exposure to risk rating and to ensure that only the best customers can take the highest loans, and that the vulnerable ones will take less loans, and that if they fail, the impact will be lower on the books. Of course, realizing the implications of each sectors, we decided that we will prioritize retail, we will prioritize manufacturing and export, because historically they've had low NPL. And that, again, moving forward, means that when we do transactions, we must have 360-degree view of what we do, both from trade, from collections, and from sales. And that will feed completely into the risk profile.
The only thing I will add to that is just to remind you that when we started this journey in 2017, we said we had a focus to revamp the entire risk management infrastructure of our institution. We mentioned the fact that we are putting new people, we implemented new processes, we deployed technology, but more importantly, the governance around our entire risk architecture has been significantly enhanced. And the result that we have shows clearly that we've done the right thing. The vintage NPL today is less than 0.5%. We do not intend to change this new structure that has worked for us over the last 3.5 years. We would work within the defined risk appetite, and we are comfortable that we have designed a new risk architecture that can deal with on and off course risk, and we should not find ourselves in the position where we had an oversized risk position compared with our peers. So that is what should give you the comfort that we've fixed the fundamentals, and the fundamentals are working.
Thank you. And we can now move to our next question. Comes from Muyiwa Oni of SBG Securities. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen, and thank you for taking time to take our questions. I just have a few follow-up questions. First is on the interest rate environment. I wanted to have a view of where loan yields are right now and your view on loan yields in the medium term, given the pressure on the from the LDR policy. I think secondly, you did answer the questions on USSD, so I just wanted to get a sense of what's happening in that space, particularly with the issues around fees on USSDs with telcos, and then secondly, your e-banking business overall. Just trying to gauge which of the channels drive more profitability, USSD or mobile banking. And then also just trying to figure out how you're positioning for PSBs and the likely risk from that, given the strong income you're seeing on e-banking. And then thirdly, just still wanted to get a view of where your ROE, medium-term ROE outlook is.
The interest rate environment, I think, is clear. Directionally, it looks like rates will trend lower, certainly on the liability side. Now, on the asset side, we did see some decline in asset pricing, especially in the top-tier segment, in the run-up to meeting the initial September 30th deadline. As you would expect, in the scramble to put on quality assets, we saw rates come down. Our view is that rates start to normalize going forward, because if you think about it, it's a one-time event for whatever loans have been put on as of September to comply with the LDR as at that time. Now that the deadline has been extended to December, and the limit has been increased, you expect that at least in that segment of the market, rates may remain a bit subdued there. However, for the rest of the market, we haven't seen any significant decline. So our sense is that this appears to be a bit more NIM supportive directionally going forward.
On the issue of USSD, mobile banking, digital income, what I would say is for us, the platforms are very important to us. They are strategically important to us. Today, we have by far the largest number of customers on the USSD platform. We have about 8.5 million FirstBank customers actively transacting on our USSD platform. We have over 3 million people on our first mobile platform. So these are very important platforms for us. Regarding the dispute with the telcos, we believe we are going to find a landing that will work for all the parties. We are meeting, we are having conversation, and we believe this will be resolved shortly. We've also been very deliberate around our agency banking. We currently have about 37,000 agents. So when you throw what we've done, vis-à-vis your question on the PSB Bank, we think we are well positioned to keep and maintain our space. However, we are also not completely averse to cooperation. We do have very good relationship with all the telcos, and we believe in the fullness of time, what will emerge will be some form of cooperation. Well, we built our business up, and we're still building it up, and we have enough, we have sufficient skill in that when you combine all our relevant businesses to maintain our market share.
Now, this is Patrick. In terms of the ROE, here's how we could look at it. And first of all, we imagine that when you say in the medium term, you're looking at 1 to 3 years out. So by the end of this year, would have made significant progress with our workforce optimization. We've made excellent investments in IT and process improvement initiatives. We would have dealt with most of our balance sheet issues, both for loans and non-loans. We'll have a stronger balance sheet from a funding perspective. Frankly, the things that have shackled us would largely have been dropped off. So over the next 3 years, which is the guidance you've requested, we have no doubt whatsoever that we will easily exceed 20%, easily.
Okay, and again, if you'd like to ask a question, it's star one. And we'll now take our next question. It comes from Clement Adeyewi of Rand Merchant Bank. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my question. My line cut off earlier on, so some of these questions maybe may have been answered. So first is, before the line cut off, I heard that you said your adjusted CAR is around 10.2%. And also you mentioned that you're planning to raise Tier 2 Eurobond and claw back some risk from your risk reserves. Can you share what value of how much are you looking to raise in Tier 2 bond? And also from your estimates, what are you looking at in terms of clawback from the risk reserve?
Okay, this is Patrick again. Correct, the about the 10.2, of which again I pointed out that 9.8% of that was T1 related. Our expectation by the end of the year again be north of 17%. And I think, and I also explained that it's going to be a combination of a couple of things. Capitalizing our retained earnings, so that will give us the capital boost. And then I didn't say euro bonds, but consummating ongoing T2 raise efforts to boost our CAR. Again, we expect to close the year north of 17%. Now, in terms of, there are two bits that I'll be sticking out. The first is the transition adjustment portion, which I explained earlier was about 30 billion. The regulatory risk reserve is about 32 billion, so they actually match off. And we are confident about making progress on that to the extent of our loan book cleanup, and the reserves will have built to make that less necessary. But then again, even if all isn't released, we still have capital headroom by the end of the year. UKK spoke about next year. Given with all the things we've done this year and with the balance sheets we have for next year and all the ongoing initiatives, including the transactional income growth potential, the earnings potential of the group will be significant. So we will be once again in that position to freely accrete capital from earnings during the period. So short answer to your question, 30 billion transition versus 33 billion regulatory risk reserve we hope to expect to get. Capitalization of our T1, of our earnings, and complementing that with the T2 raise should take care of us beautifully by the end of this year. And all the organic capital accretion for next year should just provide any additional capital headroom that we want.
Okay, just to clarify again, please, because you referenced the comment around Eurobond. You recall that when we had the first half conference call, we said we are considering several options and that we would be able to make a call. Every option is on the table. It may not necessarily be now, but into next year, all of those options are still on the table. And that question was, that answer was given in the context of where we expect to be by end of next year. So we have enough time to look at several options, but clearly, what is indisputable is that we have not leveraged our Tier 1 and we still have opportunities to do a Tier 2 capital. But the form it's going to take is what we'll disclose at the right time.
Thank you. We can now move to our next question from Rana Gadia of EFG Hermes. Please go ahead.
Hi guys. Sorry, I got cut off before. I could ask a follow-up question. I just come back to the LDR issue, and sorry for keep coming back to this issue, because from my point of view, I think it is the single largest issue facing the bank and the industry right now, particularly the bank, given the asset quality and capital issues that you have worked hard to try and resolve over the last 4 or so years. Segun, I understand your point that you cannot give us what the exact figure is because your funding base is dynamic, but at least it would be very useful if you could tell us what the funding would include, because as of now, we're not sure what that is. Previously, we were led to believe that it would include only deposits, but from our understanding, it also includes other borrowing sources, and given that you are in the process of potentially issuing Tier 2 capital, that could therefore mean that you might have to grow your loan book even more. So even if you can't give us an exact figure, it would be useful if you could give us some sort of a range in terms of how much loan growth you need to achieve. That's it from my end.
On the LDR, yes, I'm sure you have seen the template regulators supplied across banks, and it's more of loan to funding. Yes, you are correct. includes borrowing, venture, and all that. But it's also important to state that the loan book being considered by central bank also includes bonds, corporate bonds, so not strictly loans. I mean, if you check our financials today, you'll be looking at my loan to customers. But when central bank is looking at it, they also consider corporate loans, corporate bonds, which will not show in my books as loan to customer in the first place. So there are a lot of variables that you can actually not sit back, just take the balance sheet and compose as you go. You need to see how the details worked out. Why I would not to give you details is the fact that, yes, I may have tier two, but the size of my tier two might not represent what the growth in my funding will have looked like in the first place. So it's also moving. Again, I will not be able to guide because I know that it's possible because the deposit, I mean, the funding base we're looking at includes both local and foreign and domiciliary deposits. So it depends on the time and maturity of deposits. Those things could evaporate. So it depends on what it looks like. So I won't be able to give you that. But I know that looking at what we have today, if I take 5% of my deposit base today and you take that as proxy for moving from 60 to 65, assuming that at an end of October I've met 60%, and you do your math and say 5% of my funding base, I'm sure you could approximate. But the reality here is that capital is not a showstopper for us. The more important thing is for us to have assets within our risk appetite for us to book. And it's also important for us to state here that before we took care of AE in Q2, our loan deposit ratio was actually 59.9. So which means that some certain AE in Q2, we would not have been under any LDR pressure or demand. So it's not something that is other material for us to meet. Our balance sheet already took care of that before. So we are only trying to rebalance the books, and it's not something that is material for us to handle.
Thank you.
Yes. There are no questions, please.
There are no further questions at this time. I would like to hand the call back to Mr. Uke Eke for any closing remarks. Please go ahead, sir.
Okay. Thank you so very much for your continuing interest in FBN Holdings' story. What is clear is that we have done all that we promised we're going to do to reposition this franchise to profitable and sustainable growth. Next year, we're going to commence a new planning cycle, which means that we'll be guiding you to new numbers by the time we also present our full year 2019 results. But in the meantime, if there are other concerns or questions you'd like to take up with us, please feel free to reach out to Luke, the head of HR, or any of our officers that have been on this call. But again, we thank you sincerely for your interest. Bye-bye.
This concludes the FBN Holdings Financial Results Call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.